Welcome to the Herpetile Podcast. My name is Nash and I love herpetology. This podcast explores all things to do with reptiles and amphibians. I hope you like it. Welcome to the show. My name is Nash and I'm the host of the Herpetile Podcast. My guest today is Dr. Ricky Spencer. Ricky is a senior zoology lecturer at the University of Western Sydney and the head of Wild Lab. Before that, he was a senior research scientist working with invasive animals to develop new vertebrate pest control methods. His PhD research investigated the impact of foxes on freshwater turtle populations in the Murray River, which is on the border of Victoria and New South Wales in Australia. He has spent more than 15 years working on his research about vertebrate pests. Ricky is also the manager of TurtleSat and WombatSat, which are community mapping citizen science projects. Welcome to the show, Ricky.
Thanks, Nash. Great to be talking with you.
Thanks. So my first question today is, how and when did you first become interested in working with animals?
Oh, I can't even remember. I've always wanted to work with animals. I think I've always had animals, and I think that's probably been the most important thing. And I always wanted to be a vet. I remember during primary school and high school, there were vets on TV. I remember there was an old show called Country Practice, and it was a country vet. And I thought, I want to work with animals. I want to do that sort of thing. Ever since I can remember, I've always wanted to work with animals.
So you turned out not wanting to be a vet eventually?
Well, it's quite interesting. I think you always think that the only jobs you can get working with animals is being a vet until you sort of get to university. And I think one of the things that, I always still wanted to be a vet, but it's so hard to get into vet at university. You have to get an almost 100% in your high school, and it's really, really hard. So I thought, well, I'll go and do zoology, do a science degree at zoology and that sort of opened my eyes that you can actually do a whole range of other conservation or physiology or whole range. You can make careers working with animals in different aspects of it. So quite quickly after starting zoology, I kind of went, well, I don't want to be a vet anymore. I want to do conservation work and that sort of thing.
So have you always thought once you discovered that you didn't want to be a vet and you wanted to be a herpetologist or a zoologist and stuff like that, did you always have in mind that you'd be, that your work would be what you're doing today?
I guess once I got to uni, I sort of, the people that I worked with and the lecturers and that sort of thing were just so awesome that I thought that's what I want to do. I want to do research and I want to teach in that. And again, it's hard to do. A lot of people want to do it as well. So you have to get a bit lucky. But I started down doing a research project with my supervisor and real mentor, Professor Mike Thompson at Sydney Uni, working on turtles. And, kind of have been working on them ever since.
So you started working on them and then you just kept working on them?
Yeah. Look, I guess one of the things about doing research and being an academic is basically coming up with ideas and, exploring the natural world, looking at things and think, well, now that works, or how do we save this species? And it just keeps going. So it's kind of, I guess one of the big things I saw when I started doing my research was just what damage the invasive pest, the fox that we have, was doing to our turtle populations. And it was really that something needed to be done. It was they're destroying about 95% of turtle nests, which is throughout the country, pretty much. So very few little baby turtles get into the population. So that's, I guess, I've sort of, that's been a driving passion to conserve our turtles and defeat the fox, I guess. Yes.
How long did you know about that sort of thing?
Well, I did my first honours project in 1996 or 1997. And I saw, walking around the Murray River, just saw all these eggshells that were just eaten by foxes, just huge amounts. Mm-hmm. And my PhD and honours supervisor, who I talked about, Mike Thompson, had done the same thing back in 1983 and 1984 mm-hmm. down in South Australia, and he found exactly the same thing. So we're now talking about, at least we know about, and it's probably been for, you know, since foxes were ever introduced, we know for the last 40 years or so, nest predation rates have been 95% plus, nearly 100% each year. So that was really alarming, that, you know, how long can our turtles sort of sustain it? And the other thing I found, and which hadn't really been, you know, discovered at that time, was that the foxes were also taking, or also killing the adult females as they came out to nest. So it wasn't just taking the eggs, they were, you know, killing those females as well. So,
is that what made you become interested in working to address invasive species?
Yeah, absolutely. So what I think probably what I've been trying to do for the last 20 years or so is trying to outfox the fox. And we've got to the point where I don't think we can do it in terms of, you know, the traditional way that you know, foxes are taken from an area to try and exclude them from an area. So we're now looking at new ways. Can we actually, you know, okay, all right, foxes, we know you're actually going to, you know, do some damage because you're too good. Like, as in, they are, they're amazing. It only takes one fox in an area to destroy nearly 100% of the nest. So even if you had 10 foxes and they were they were taken from an area and you still only had one left, and it's so hard to get them all, that one fox would do all the damage. So what we're trying to do is really outsmart them and actually look at areas now. What we call the 1 Million Turtles Project is to, all right, can we incubate eggs? We're going to have school programs. We're going to have set up islands on in the water so the foxes can't get to them, or put fences out and that sort of thing, so that we can now...
Yeah.
Put lots and lots. You're going to eat some eggs, okay, but we're going to put more babies out than what you can eat eggs, and that's what we want to get to. And hopefully that's the solution that we can, until we can, you know, eradicate foxes completely.
Yeah, because they're invasive.
They are. They're introduced by humans, and that's a large problem. It's not their fault. In the 1860s. Yeah. So,
Do you know why they were introduced?
There's a couple of reasons. We had rabbits, and so certainly rabbits were doing they were introduced and they were doing some damage, but also potentially for fox hunts, that very, I guess, a very British way, you know, when that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so they were introduced potentially for a few reasons.
So then you protect Australian turtles. Which invasive species do you think harms them the most? Because I think it's probably foxes.
Yeah, look, they're the ones. And probably the next one would be humans, cars. So
yeah,
with Turtlesat, we've been shocked at, and that's, Turtlesat's our citizen science project. So anyone can do it. Anyone sees a turtle hit on the road or crossing the road or that sort of thing, you can download the app or go to turtlesat.org.au and record where you see it. And we've had thousands of people doing it. And we're now...
And you've done that with... Have you done that with wombats too?
Yeah, we set that up for wombats too. And my colleague here, Julie Old, who pretty much runs it now, but it's the same same idea. So where wombats are being hit on the road, or the other thing what the wombats get is mange, which is, you know, basically a disease that makes them itch and their hair falls out and that sort of thing. So, but you can see it, and yeah. We want to record where, you know, lots of wombats with mange are so that we can treat them. But the turtle sat app's been really, I guess, really good to show, but bad in a way, in that it just shows how many turtles get hit by cars on roads. And the reason why they get hit on the roads is that they actually come out. A lot of our roads go by rivers or wetlands and that sort of thing. But they actually come out to nest. And when a turtle comes out to nest, it's looking for the highest point. And so because it wants to dig a nest and put it in a nice sunny area and it'll keep it dry, the highest point will be, you know, will never get flooded. And often our roads are put at the highest point around rivers, so they don't get flooded. So they come up thinking, oh, I've got a great nesting site, and think, you know, they'll dig on the roads or, you know, hit that area, and they get hit on the roads, which is unfortunate. And think about one nest of turtle eggs has about 20 or 30 eggs in them. But that female who produced them can live nearly 100 years. So if they're producing, you know, 100 years of eggs, every year 20 or 30 eggs, taking that female out is a lot of eggs that are not going to be produced anymore. So losing our adult females is probably the worst thing that can actually happen to a turtle population, because they'll go extinct really quickly.
Have you done any tracking work with them?
Yeah. So we've tracked little hatchlings. I've got a PhD student who has put little transmitters on the hatchlings and basically looked at what's the best way to release them. So do you keep them for a little while, the hatchlings, and so they get a bit bigger, or do you release them straight away? And what she found is that they actually do a little bit better. They do better releasing them straight away because they find their habitats much quicker. So if we actually keep them for a while, they get used to us feeding them and that sort of thing, and they don't do quite as well. So so that's for what we call head starting. That's where a lot of, you know, you see that with a lot of sea turtles, where people agencies will collect the eggs, incubate them somewhere else, and then grow them up. One of my PhD students showing that, you know, maybe it's, even though they're small, might be best to release them straight away.
What do you think else is harming them? Because if it's mainly foxes and humans, is there anything else that doesn't actually do that much but still harms them?
So during not the current drought, but the last drought, which we call the millennium drought, there were tens of thousands of freshwater turtles down in South Australia who basically grew almost like coral on their shells. It became so salty down in South Australia, the rivers, that this what they call a marine or sea tube worm started growing on their shells and burrowing into their shells. So that's where things like water quality are very, very important for them as well. So, you know, if we start doing, you know, pretty bad things to our rivers, turtles are pretty tolerant, but, you know, once they start dying off, you know, the water quality is pretty bad. So, so we have, you know, water is really, really important. So we really need to, you know, watch what we do in our river systems and wetland systems.
So then what other ways that you found best protect the turtles from foxes?
Yeah, so to protect the turtles?
Yeah,
so anyone can do this. It's really cool that there's a group that's based where you are in Melbourne called Turtle Australia, and they've actually come up with little packs that you can make up yourself. And when you find a turtle nesting, you can actually put this mesh over the top, and it's wide enough so foxes can't really get into it. And it probably costs about $1 each. You know, it's something that you can go to the hardware or, you know, your big thing like Kmart and that sort of thing and buy that sort of that green wire mesh. And you can do that. Anyone can do that.
But then just a question about that. How do the turtles get out? And then like mesh on the top.
Yeah, so the mesh is actually got – the mesh is actually – the size of the mesh is wide enough so that the hatchlings can actually get out, climb out, so they can climb through it. So you can actually just leave it there and not worry about them.
So so it's a little bit too big for the foxes, but perfect for the turtles.
Absolutely. So it's big and wide enough for the where the foxes can't, you know, get through. Although some of them have been getting through and they've been coming up with very few, but some cunning ones have really worked it out. And so Graham Stockfeld with Turtles Australia, that group have come up with a, you know, if you're starting to have a fox problem and the typical mesh doesn't work, they've got a much tougher one that they show you how to use on their Turtles Australia website. So you can see.
So... then if someone wanted to, like, start helping you with one of these citizen science projects, how would they do that?
So the best thing is to go to TurtleSat, which is the first thing we need to do is actually know where turtles are nesting or where they're being hit on roads. So you can just record where you see them. Once we work out where turtles are nesting, and usually, you know, it's quite easy to see because most of the nests are dug up and they're just eggshells on the ground, we can actually then start saying, right, well, next year we know that they nest there and they love to come back to the same sorts of areas. So you could actually go out and actually sit down and wait for the turtles to nest because it's pretty predictable. So where you are in Melbourne, you've got pretty much eastern longnecks. And those first spring, early summer thunderstorms drives the turtles out to nest. So you can walk around to your wetland or if you know where your nesting site is and sit there and wait for the turtles to finish nesting and then you can protect it. But we're also want to implement other programs where community groups and public can one of it's we're really excited about is a turtles in a school program. So where schools can actually incubate turtle eggs really easily and actually be part of that conservation program. So we want to get lots and lots of schools involved, lots of people involved in that sort of thing as well. But the simplest thing is just walk around your wetland. The more you spend walking around a river, a pond, a lake, and the more you'll see things and the more you can actually do.
So this is just a bit of a fact. I read on your website, I think it was a million turtles, that turtles have been found to communicate with each other so that they hatch at the same time. Can you tell us more about that and why?
Yeah, that's really cool. So we have been, we've done quite a bit of work to look at that what we call synchronous hatching. So probably everyone's seen, you know, the image of little turtles, sea turtles at the beach all coming out at once. And that's actually a really hard thing to do because the turtles, the eggs at the bottom of the nest and the top of the nest are incubating at different temperatures. And those that are hotter will develop faster and you think hatch earlier and then come out. Whereas those at the bottom, they're potentially much cooler and they take longer to hatch. But what you see generally is turtles all hatching at the same time or at least coming out of the nest at the same time. So we tried to look at how did they do this and or did they do it? And, yeah, we did. We found that turtles in groups of nests would hatch out at the same time compared to those that are, you know, incubated individually. So, you know, that they would somehow communicate. And that's not, we're not entirely sure how they communicate. Some of the things we thought, you know, potentially, you know, all those eggs, you know, next to each other, their heart rates, they can might be able to detect their heart rates against the shell, you know, boom, 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 boom type of thing.
Yes.
But the real interesting thing, and we haven't done it in Australian turtles, but in South American turtles over the last few years, they've actually put in what they call these hydrophone phones, and they've actually found that hatchling turtles can make noises that we can't hear them, but at certain frequencies they can actually make sounds. And adults do too underwater. So that's something we're really keen to explore, whether that's, you know, maybe they're making noises in the egg to say, not talking, but almost saying, come on, guys, we're all about to go. So maybe it might be that something as simple as that. But we'd,
so yeah. So then it wouldn't be exactly there's like tons of words, but they just know that the sound means time to get out.
Yeah. Have you heard, have you seen those documentaries where little crocodiles or alligators, when they hatch, make sort of a squealing noise and then mum comes and gets them?
Yeah.
Maybe it's something like that. And mum doesn't necessarily come and get them, but at least maybe they can hear each other making noises, which sort of helps them stimulate to increase the, develop quicker, or they wait until they, you know, they're all making noises before they hatch out and head towards the water.
So then can you explain exactly what the meaning or what turtle sat is?
Yeah. So turtle sat, I guess probably maybe 4 or 5 years ago, we thought, there's lots and lots of turtles being hit on the roads, but how many are there, or how many nests are being destroyed? Where are their nesting sites? And we thought, what's the best way? Could we get people to capture that for us? And, you know, the first thing I thought of is that nearly everyone these days is carrying a computer, a photo, a camera, a GPS device, all in their back pockets, which is your cheap mobile phone. So, you know, it tells you where you are. You can take a photo. It basically, you know, you can, you know, it's a computer where you can upload to the internet and that sort of thing. So we thought, all right, let's get an app. Let's try and create something where, something very easy where people can take a photo and or they can just tap on a map where they saw a turtle or a nest, and it all comes through the internet to the cloud, and everyone can see it. And that's what we created. It's called Turtle Survey and Analysis Tools, or Turtle Sat. And that's, yeah, the website's turtlesat.org.au, or there's apps for Android and iPhone where people can record that.
So anyone can get it?
Yeah, absolutely anyone can get it. So all you need is your mobile phone and an internet connection, and you can.
Mm-hmm.
You can. The good thing too is that, you know, a lot of people are driving, and we don't want to use their phone then. But they can, if they remember where it is, they can drive home, and they can go to the website on their computer or their phone, and put it in at a later date and tap on where they saw it. So, yeah, absolutely, anyone can record it, and we've got, I think, about 9,000 sightings so far. So, and some of it, when you actually look at it, it's kind of sad, because we've got icons where, you know, it's got a cross through it. It means that the dead turtle's been seen, and there's lots and lots and lots of crosses through there, which is unfortunate.
So another thing is, can you also explain what citizen science is?
Yep.
Is it like similar? Is it a similar thing?
It is. It is citizen science. So what it is essentially people being enabled to collect data that can be used for science. So what we're collecting, you know, data on where we're seeing turtles and that sort of thing. Normally, as a scientist, I'd have to go out and survey myself. But what we're trying to do is that, you know, the collective and involving lots and lots of people to collect the same sort of data that I'd go out and collect to work out, what, you know, how many turtles are alive or dead and that sort of thing. So it's the same thing. And what we try to do is create tools, really easy to use tools like an app where people can
collect
that data and we can use it. And we've got lots and lots of cases where communities themselves have actually used it to, you know, go to the governments and say, hey, you need to put signs in here because there's lots of turtles being hit. So lots of communities along the Murray River. Now there's signs about turtle crossing and nesting and that sort of thing that has been used by citizen scientists using TurtleSat.
Yeah. By the way, sorry, I think I have, like, noisy neighbours right now.
That's all right. I've got noisy neighbours who are Corellas. Yeah, they're all about to land here at the moment, so they may get very loud.
So in 1 million turtles, what are you trying to achieve, or even how are you? Like, is it different to your other work, or is it the same?
Well, it's the evolution of our work about conserving turtles, and particularly dealing with issues like foxes, cars, those sort of things, that road mortality. It's coming up with what we're calling innovative solutions. So that we know that the standard management of foxes is not working for turtles. Like I said, one fox remains, it will still do the same damage.
Yeah.
So we're trying to come up with a whole range of solutions that involves the community and across, you know, throughout most of Australia to actually be involved in putting more turtles back into what we call the Million Turtles concept or project.
Yeah.
Because we want a million turtles to be, you know, a million hatchling turtles to go back into populations. So, but we can't do it ourselves. We need communities involved in it.
And so but do you know what the turtle is? The turtle population right now over a million?
Well, it depends on the species. There's a turtle we've worked out. On here, called the up in New South Wales, called the Bellinger River snapping turtle. And about 4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago now, a virus, almost like what we're going through as a human population, it's very in the same family of like where coronaviruses are, wiped out a turtle population. And pretty much there were about 5,000 of those turtles in that river system. In 2 weeks, it was down to about 200 left. So the virus had killed turtles.
Is there any left now?
Yeah, there's about 300 left. And guess what? They're all, you know, essentially juveniles or kids. Most of the adult population was wiped out. So in some, you know, eastern longnecks, which are probably the most common, they call it the common longneck, but it's one of the most affected. But it is quite common. Yeah, you know, it's the one that people see on roads and people think there's lots and lots there. And there probably still are lots there, but what we do know is that they're all very, very old turtles because there's no juveniles coming through. So we call it the ultimate aging population because it's called perceived persistence, as in lots of people see them and think, oh, they're all right, you know, they're still crossing roads and that sort of thing. But because they live for so long but no little babies are coming through, there'll come a stage that, you know, and it's getting very, very close to, and I think we're starting to see it happening now. We definitely are starting to see it happening now, that there, where there were lots and lots of turtles, you know, maybe 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago, we're now starting to see none of them. So they're all, you know, heading towards extinction.
So then I'm guessing the national nest you can explain this if I'm wrong, but I'm guessing the National Nest Predation Survey is like counting how many nests got predated?
Yeah, so there's an easy way to measure nest predation. It's really hard to find turtle nests except if they've been dug up. But you don't know how many exactly how many are left. So we came up with a way to measure nest predation without really using turtle eggs. So we go to the same area where turtles nest and we just put in, you know, 10 chicken eggs. Oh, sorry, 10 nests with 2 chicken eggs in each. So about 20 eggs in there. And we know exactly where they are. So we just monitor them during, you know, around nesting season and that sort of thing. It was kind of, and we compared it to predation rates of turtle eggs. So we did a comparison of those and it was came out almost exactly the same. So, and we kind of thought, you know, well, anyone could do this. Anyone could go out to their wetland or and put in, you know, some chicken eggs underground and just see how many survive. So what we hopefully going to do, hopefully everyone can get out by November and go to their wetlands and work with their, you know, their wetland agencies or community groups and actually put out 10 chicken eggs. We also want them to, you know, put out cameras and see if we can see how many foxes are around as well. But the main thing, what we call the National Nest Predation Survey, is that people go out with a couple of cartons of chicken eggs, put them underground and see how many get dug up. And that will give you an indication of the nest predation rates on turtle eggs in that area.
So anyone can do that too?
Yeah, look, anyone can do that. Within reason, we don't want people going onto other people's properties and going on the national park and without permission and that sort of thing. So the best thing, you know, particularly, you know, in national parks or that sort of thing, there'll be a local community group that helps look after. They'll be doing it and you can join in with them. But if you've got your own property where you might have your own lake or swamp, you could easily do it yourself.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favourite turtle species?
Oh, favourite turtle species. that's a tough one. Look, I lived in America for a little while. I did some research on the Mississippi turtles, Mississippi River turtles, working on panda turtles. Yeah. But there was a nest that was dug up, I think, by a coyote, and it was a snapping turtle nest, like a, you know, those big, not an alligator snapping turtle, but a big one of those big ones. And I took back an egg. And incubated it because there were one it had been dug up, but there were a few eggs that were left. And I took one back, incubated it, and I kept him while I lived in America. And he tank. He looked like a hatched out, and he was like a big tank. And he so I would have to say that I have a special spot in my heart for common snapping turtles in North America, but in Australia. My favourite by far are the broad-shell turtles. They're the biggest freshwater turtle in Australia with a side neck. So many people probably think about turtles, you know, see cartoons where they pull their head in. Our turtles don't really do that other than one, which is the pig-nosed turtle. But we think that turtle was a saltwater turtle at one stage and it got lost up the rivers. So it's probably an old saltwater turtle, but... but the what we call our side neck turtles, the big broad shell one, that's the biggest one.
Yeah.
It pulls its head to the side and it's the gentle giant of the Murray River. So it can get out to about half a metre and its neck can go another half a metre. So you basically get a turtle that's like a metre long when it comes out. And the funniest thing they do is like when you try and you pick them up, they stick all their four legs and their claws straight out. Like as in, you know, you could tip them upside down and their legs are just sticking right out. So they're lots of fun. They're a great turtle.
So if you could tell everyone in the world something about reptiles or amphibians, what would it be?
One about turtles that a lot of people don't know. There's a lot of turtles that can actually breathe through their butt. So they can breathe almost like a fish through their butt. And they have what's called a cloacal bursae, so which is like a little, I guess, a little bag, you know, up in their butt where they can suck in water and take oxygen, like a bit like a fish gill. And it becomes really, really important in winter. So when they hibernate, or what they call brumate in reptiles, they get really cold underwater and they don't want to move around. So there's a bunch of turtles that will actually stick their heads down into the mud and potentially put their butts out and just take in that little bit of oxygen that they can get across like a fish. And that may help them not come up for a breath. You know, think about, oh, I'm tired, cold turtle. I have to swim up and get a breath. But this might stop them, you know, for a days or many days actually, you know, getting enough oxygen just from that. So that's probably one cool fact about turtles. So, yes.
On that, I think I saw something about a study or a paper that there was a species of turtles that basically was different to all the rest. So all the rest did that. They breathed through their butt, but they didn't see that or anything when they were studying it and no one knew.
Yeah.
So I think what they found was that they just do like little turtle push-ups to get oxygen under them.
They can also, there are some that won't do it through their butt, but they can do it, I guess, over their throat, so they can take in water and do it that way as well. So there's a few that will do that. But, yeah, there's on the other thing, what I haven't said is that turtles are so important for the ecosystem. They're we call them the vacuums of the river. So they pretty much go anything. If anyone's kept a turtle, have you got turtles? Or
no, I've got a snake.
I think everyone, if you've ever kept a turtle and they get to know you, all they want to do is, as soon as you walk past, they'll come up like trying to swim out, almost jumping out of the tank, wanting food. And that's what they do in the rivers too. Well, you're not doing it, but they're just swimming around looking for dead fish and anything that they can eat. So when fish die, it's pretty much the turtles that are the ones that, you know, clean it up. They're the scavengers. They're the ones that, and you can imagine, and we've had fish kills, how bad and how smelly the rivers get. So without turtles, that fish that dies takes a very, very, very long time to break down. So, and we've been doing, you know, experiments on that. And a fish that takes about, without a turtle in there, takes about, you know, in a hot summer, takes about a month to break down properly. With turtles in there, that fish is gone within 3 or 4 days. So that's they're really, really important for the ecosystem.
So do you keep any turtles or animals?
I used to have them as pets, but since we've been doing experiments on, like, experimentally, you know, raising them and hatching them and that sort of thing, it's like, well, no, I don't need them as pets anymore because I've got them here and we've got, you know, it's part of my work now. So, I don't actually have any turtles at the moment as pets.
Any other pets?
Lots and lots of pets. We've got about 200 stick insects. They all hatched. They started with 5 and they dropped.
I got four.
And last summer they all hatched and we've got about 200 which have been giving to schools and that sort of thing. I've got 2 border collie pups. They're about a year and one's about 7 months. And so, yes, they're certainly our new children. So, yeah. And we've got actually a couple of indoor cats, always been indoor. We've got a cage outside.
Yeah.
So that, you know, because cats are bad predators as well. And lots of chickens. But we haven't got any reptiles at the moment. But my son's been asking, he's about your age. And we're certainly looking at, you know, either bearded dragons or blue tongues that we've got a we're slowly declining the insect. They're in a insect, sorry, the stick insects, and they're in like a reptile type enclosure, you know, the
Oh,
4 foot type one, and I think they're gonna become a lizard enclosure, I think. So
yeah.
yes, but keep up loving your animals and that sort of thing. I probably didn't say is that, you know, how I always loved animals. The first thing I did when I was 12 was walk in. There was a job going at the local aquarium and pet store to clean out bird cages and that sort of stuff. And I started at 12, you know, in the aquarium, and I worked there for about 14 years before, you know, I went through all uni, and before I moved to Queensland for work here and that sort of thing. And pretty much every weekend I was, you know, and I always had marine fish and freshwater fish and that sort of thing as well. So yeah,
Yeah.
keep pets and loving your pets and stuff. Yeah.
I have one last question. It's a bit of a short one, but what is an unusual fact about reptiles or amphibians that people might want to know?
Other than them breathing through their buds, let me think. So some of the oldest tortoises, like the big land tortoises, they live more than 200 years. So very, very, very long-lived animals. And we think some of the freshwater ones that we have here live more than 100 years. But
Oh, you, wait, you broke up for a second.
oh,
So,
sorry.
yeah.
Yeah. So just some of the very long-lived animals. So it can live more than 200 years, some of those big land tortoises. The one interesting thing about them too is that there's, you know, in North America, there's been some studies that have been following them for more than, you know, sort of 50, 60, 70 years. And with most animals, as they get older, you know, and particularly old, they'll stop reproducing or have less and less offspring. But what they're finding is that the bigger, older turtles, they don't seem to stop reproducing, and they'll have more and more eggs, so they'll actually produce more and more eggs. And no one really knows whether they actually, you know, actually grow old as such and stop having babies. So, you know, that's a really interesting
That
fact.
might just be like the reason they have more is because of their size. Because the bigger
Yeah,
the like yeah like
absolutely.
that's how Burmese pythons so bad in the Everglades, because they get so big and then they can have so many eggs.
That's exactly right. But there's a point where old animals stop reproducing, like as in, but for certain species, at least that's been followed of turtles that have been followed for a long time, they don't stop reproducing. The oldest ones are still producing the most eggs. So what's that called is senescence. When you stop having eggs, stop producing babies and that sort of thing, they call that senescence. And they don't know, but for these species, they don't think they actually go through senescence.
Do you know why?
No, and that it's part of the aging process, and I guess there's a whole you know, sort of science around, you know, anti-aging and that kind of thing, and it may have to do about their DNA breakdown. So their cell, they may do it very slowly so that their cells don't decay as such, like as in their cell lines don't decay, which when, you know, when we get older, we get wrinkly and you know, gray hair, that means, you know, things just stop working. But there's no, in some species, there's no sign of that actually happening. So it's very, not much has been done on that. It's only really, you know, at least inference from old turtles that have been caught in the wild. But I think there's a definitely a science of aging in, you know, sort of a aging in turtles, or, you know, ultimate longevity type thing to explore. Mm. Somebody, that would be very good, very interesting topic to look at.
Anything else you want to say?
No, I think, look, keep up the good work, and we definitely want citizen scientists out there like you and everyone to, you know, become part of the Million Turtles Project, use TurtleSat and that kind of thing. So it'd be really, really, really good if this, we're now in sort of sleepy time for most turtles and most reptiles, but basically in spring we need all those citizen scientists to get out there.
Thank you so much for being on the show, Ricky.
Thank you, Nash. I love your work.
Thanks. Also, don't forget to check out Ricky's website, which I'll add in the show notes. That's all.
Thanks for listening to the Herpetile Podcast. Please subscribe so you don't miss out on any of the latest episodes. Happy herping!